And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
I love the Raiders. Most of all, I love to win.
You're now listening to State of the Nation with Jimmy Durkin, Vic Tafer, Ted Nguyen, and Tashawn Reed on the Athletic Podcast Network.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to State of the Nation here on the Athletic Podcast Network. Jimmy Durkin, Vic Tafer, Ted Nguyen, Tashawn Reed with the post-game edition after the Raiders' heartbreaking loss to the Kansas City Chiefs, a 35-31 defeat on Sunday Night Football. There's a lot of different ways you can look at this game. I mean, I'm not going to tell any Raider fans that they shouldn't be disappointed with this. This is a chance to sweep the defending Super Bowl champs. It was a chance to really get yourself right back in the AFC West playoff picture. You know, we've seen the Raiders and Chiefs over the last several years, and the Raiders really, for a while now, have not been competitive with the Chiefs. They beat them earlier this year in Kansas City. They went down to the wire here with them in Vegas. And my biggest takeaway, not just from this game, but from the season series, is that they showed that they are ready to compete with the Chiefs. Now, obviously, by next year, that can completely change. If they meet in the playoffs, that can completely change. But they proved that they were worthy of being on the same field with them.
Yeah, I agree. I think that, they definitely showed they're not scared of the Chiefs anymore. Definitely the talent level may not be quite there yet, especially when it's the Chiefs offense versus the Raiders defense. But obviously the Raiders offense is elite, and I think they showed that tonight. Kind of dictated the game for a while. So, I'm not for more victories either. And obviously you can't have a guy wide open in the end zone if his name is Travis Kelce. That was a huge breakdown, and that kind of makes the loss really, really hard to take because it was there. The win was there to be had, and they blew it. But, if you look at the bigger picture, this team is young, and they're going to learn from this. So I think you can be mad, you can be sad, but tomorrow when you wake up, you got to look at the bright side, like, you know what, we were in there, and we're ready for the next step.
Yeah, speaking of Kelce, I think I saw a quote from after the game saying that this was the best Raiders team that he's played so far. It seems to be the best, Raiders team in the second stint under Gruden so far. It's like Vic said, you know, they made some key mistakes on defense down the stretch, which I don't think that really surprised any of us. This whole season, the defense has been a liability. And, you know, when you look at it and see that they have three starters out on the reserve COVID-19 list and bunch of guys who didn't practice and a couple more guys out with injury. I mean, it was pretty much a sure bet that they were going to give up a bunch of points, but specifically that play where Kelce, you know, had the game winning touchdown catch, you know, Jonathan Abram just completely bailed on his zone. You just can't let that happen no matter, you know, if a guy didn't practice all week, whatever it is, it's just basic football. You can't do that. So the manner in which they lost obviously is going to leave a sour taste in their mouth, but kind of like you said, they showed that they could compete with, you know, arguably the best team in the league.
Yeah, I think there were so many things going against the Raiders in this game. Andy Reid coming off a bye week, having most of their defensive starters not being able to practice in a week where they absolutely had to be at practice. And they came in, and not only did they compete, they were ahead with 2 minutes left in the game. And, you know, obviously when you're playing Patrick Mahomes, who is arguably the best quarterback in the league, giving him the ball with 2 minutes left is usually not going to have a good result for even a really good defense. But yeah, it stings to lose in this manner because this would have been just a huge win going 2-0 against the Chiefs and just giving themselves a chance to even win a division. It stinks losing like this, but yeah, I mean, they proved that they are a team that can run with these elite teams in the league.
So you say that, Ted, about, you know, giving the ball to Mahomes back in the final 2 minutes. That was Mahomes' first go-ahead touchdown in the final 2 minutes of a game in his NFL career, which is pretty surprising, I guess, other than the fact that the Chiefs generally over his career, I think they're now 33-8 in 41 career starts. I guess they've been so dominant that they haven't needed a whole lot of late fourth quarter comebacks. We've seen over the years, there are certain quarterbacks you are deathly afraid of when you give them the ball with that much time left, and he's one of them. But that was the first touchdown he's thrown in the final 2 minutes of the game. Go-ahead touchdown, I would say.
Yeah, I guess they're always whooping everybody's ass, so they don't have to do that.
I would say I think the Raiders did a decent job of containing. Like, obviously, you know, there's so many weapons the Chiefs have, but there weren't a lot of big plays. I think that last throw was the longest throw of the night for the Chiefs. So I think they, for all the issues they had, they definitely didn't give up the big play. They tried to keep them a little off balance. I think they did a good job of mixing up their coverages again, and there's only so much you can do because obviously there's a lot of matchup problems with the current defensive personnel they have. But, people look at the points and they got a hand, but you do your best, but you can't. Like, I mean, I think Ted said that Mahomes is arguably the best quarterback. I think he's the best quarterback by far. I don't even think it's close. So I think
– I was trying to be nice.
That's good. Yeah, all right. I appreciate that. But I just think – I mean, and tonight he wasn't like – he was great, but he wasn't like, one of those games where he – you can't believe what you're watching, but he still was good enough to win the game.
Let's talk about the go-ahead touchdown. I mean, Jonathan Abram, I think we all look at him as a guy that is a vital piece of this Raiders defense. If this Raiders defense is going to be good in the future, he is going to be a key piece of it. But we know he can be overly aggressive. And if you look at that play, here he sees Patrick Mahomes starting to scramble, and the eyes get big, right? He thinks he's going to come and blow up this play and make a huge play, and instead he leaves Travis Kelce wide open. What has to happen for Jonathan Abram to kind of be the player the Raiders need him to be? I mean, that's, for the plays that he makes, I mean, those are the kind of plays he gives up.
I think he's such an instinctual player that he, I don't think he's thinking through everything, being careful with his decisions. He's an extremely instinctual player. I'm not comparing him to Troy Polamalu. I'm not saying that he's that type of player. Okay, so don't misquote me here. But I'm saying he plays with that kind of instinct, and he needs experience. He needs to get burned like this for him to start making these, being more careful in certain situations part of his play. I think for him, he's a guy that just needs experience. He needs these reps, and you hope that with these reps, he's going to get better in these type of situations. But I just think, for him, you can't just tell him something. He has to experience it on his own, and then it gets ingrained into his game.
I was going to say, I think that also one factor, and again, I'm not one for making excuses, but he was one of the eight guys who wasn't at practice. So I'm sure if they're walking through these defenses, and everyone knows about Kelce and the scramble reaction drills, where he's so dangerous, but I'm sure they walk through these things. I'm sure the coaches are on Abram, but hey, remember, you can't come up. You got to stay home. They tell him again and again and again. So maybe that him not being there this week, maybe that's a tiny part of it. But like you said, you guys just keep drilling it in him, and at some point it'll click. But they obviously love him. The coaches and teammates love the guy. So it's the things you learn from. He's a young guy. Like he says himself, he's a rookie this year because he didn't play last year. So you got to hope he learns from this and you don't take away from what else. The other aspects of his game that make him special.
Yeah, when we asked Gruden about it after the game, he he was really focused on the stunt by the defensive line, that led to Mahomes being able to escape the pocket and maybe look like he was going to pick up some yardage on the ground. And I don't know if he's just saying that, he's not blaming Abram for trying to get Mahomes, but I mean, he's like 20 yards away from him. Like, yeah, really no chance of making an impact on him. He would have been sliding by the time he got to him. So it was just – he just can't make that play, and I'm sure they're going to be harping on it in film review, and maybe it's just something that he has to learn through experience. But, like Ted said, it's also just kind of in his nature. So, obviously you can't take him off the field or something crazy like that, but maybe just, blowing a big game like this, essentially, maybe that's what it does. It kind of teaches him what can happen when you don't think before you act sometimes on the field. So. It might just be one of those growing pain things. Figure it out in the years to come.
That's another thing. I didn't like the call to stunt on there, because when a stunt is when you send a defensive end inside, or this type of stunt, you send a D end inside and you have to tackle, try to loop around. And Mahomes is so deadly every time he rolls to the right, specifically to the right. And, I harp on Twitter. I'm like, why do they keep letting him out to the right? And this kind of call allows him to get on the right. So, I didn't like the stunt call there. So, doesn't take the excuse off Abrams, but I didn't like that call.
I think the problem is that they have to stunt and they have to blitz because they don't have pass rush otherwise. I mean, Max Crosby gets in once in a while, but in fact they had no sacks, maybe 4 or 5 quarterback hits, but they don't have the traditional pass rusher, so they have to blitz, they have to stunt to get any kind of pressure that they get. So I think that's one of the problems they have when you look at their personnel, the way this team is built. Obviously the guys they brought in to rush the passer and not getting it done, so you gotta try other things, and that leaves you vulnerable in other spots. So
Deshaun, you mentioned Gruden talking post game, and it was a quick one. I know that he didn't get hit with a whole lot of questions. It was probably 90 seconds, 2 minutes. The Raiders didn't make any defensive players available. What did you guys make of that post game? That Raiders seemed a little bit pretty pissed off, and we didn't get to hear from the defensive players about what they thought from this game.
Yeah, I was a little surprised by that, because even after they've had some other bad performances this season, like they gave up 45 points to the Bucks, and we talked to them, some defensive players, after the game. So I don't know if guys were just super emotional because they almost won this game, and it's like, we messed up at the end, you know, we really blew it. I don't know if they just didn't want to talk, but it's not a big deal at the end of the day, but it was a little bit strange. They haven't really had that reaction from a loss so far this season.
Yeah, it's one of the downfalls of the whole Zoom thing, because like you mentioned, Gruden's really short press conference. Usually there's like 25, 30 guys clamoring to ask him really positive, like, you know, kiss-assy questions. But when they lose, they go silent, and all of a sudden there's a pause. And any kind of pause in the Zoom, he'll say, okay, we're done. And he's gone. He doesn't want to talk to us. Obviously, he's had a horrible, gut-wrenching loss on national television. He doesn't want to talk to us slappies. So I just think, I don't know. It's just obviously that's one of the problems with Zoom. And then with the locker room guys, I mean, if they cannot talk to us, you know, when we're not there face-to-face, so they don't have to talk to us if they don't want to. So it's just it's one of the problems that we have, but that's just the way the world is right now.
All right, and then Deshaun, what the hell did you do to get blocked by Derek Carr?
No, I think he had me blocked for a minute, because, like, at first I thought he just didn't have a Twitter account, but I would, like, see his tweets kind of spread out. And then finally tonight, I could, like, for some reason, his tweet popped up with him doing a little death stare on the Raiders because they retweeted it. And I was like, oh, okay, maybe I can see it now. And tapped, and it's like, nah, you're blocked. I think it's that, you remember what the Lynn Bowden, when he got drafted? I think that was it.
That makes sense.
There's no way.
You put him on the bench.
I think that was never, because I haven't said anything.
Oh, that's,
I've never
definitely
said anything
else
negative about Derek Carr that I can think of. That might be it.
Man, you really didn't think Derek Carr had a Twitter account, man. Derek Carr, the off season on Twitter is just, I used to have the Derek Carr, notifications, the push notifications on. I had every year, you know, just as a beat writer, you got to kind of be following all that stuff. And every year in the off season, I would just have to turn those off, because it would just, my phone would just be ding, 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 Derek Carr in the off season on Twitter. So, but all right, yeah, I could see that Lynn Bowden tweet. I mean, you benched him for a guy who got traded.
Not the entire game. Just mixing it up a little bit. Come on now.
But let's be real. Derek Carr played phenomenal. Obviously, the last throw of the game is an interception. But that doesn't take away from how well he played. And really, two games this year against the Chiefs, that might be his two best games of the season. He played phenomenal. Again, was just in control of that offense. I mean, just did not seem to be feeling any pressure. I mean, I will say the last couple of drives did seem a little bit weird. It seemed like probably the last 4 or 5 passes, you know, including the touchdown, you know, the drive where they scored the go-ahead touchdown. It did seem like a lot of the throws, even if he wasn't feeling pressure, were kind of off the back foot. But regardless, I mean, this was a phenomenal game by Derek Carr.
This is probably the best game that I've seen him play when plays break down. And, you know, we've been talking about his steady improvement. I think he made some improvements, not enough last season. And this season, you saw him getting better, making better decisions. But this game, he was like lethal when plays broke down. He was making big plays. That throw to Aguilar on that fade route where he was rolling right, that was an incredible throw. I mean, I did not think he had the angle to somehow make that throw, and he did. You know, credit to him, but unfortunately this wasn't enough. But as far as out-of-structure play, this was probably the best that I've seen Carr at.
Yeah, I think in some ways this might have been better than his first game against the Chiefs, just because I think in that first game a lot of you know, a lot of it was just, you know, hitting big plays, whether it was to Ruggs or Aguilar or whatever it might have been. And they had the run game going, you know, so that kind of kept the Chiefs on edge a little bit more. This game, the run game, they really couldn't get it going consistently. And so that put more pressure on Carr, and he was still able to have, you know, a pretty incredible game. And he had, and this has become an issue, I think, more so in recent weeks, but guys are dropping a good amount of his passes now. I think it was one drive that the Alec Engel dropped two passes, and Aguilar had a couple of drops, I believe. And so even having the drops and not having the run game and missing a couple starting offensive linemen, he played, you know, one of his better games this season. So yeah, it was pretty impressive.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie? Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
Yeah, I'm not crazy about Engel, three targets, Ruggs, one target. That's not good. They got to do something about that. I mean, I know they're trying to work him in, but they draft him to be their version of Tyreek Hill. And we watch the game tonight, and the original guy is, you know, still a dominant player, but the new guy is kind of invisible. So they got to figure that out.
Yeah, and Ruggs had the one carry and then caught the one pass. Those were in back-to-back plays. Inside 5 minutes of the fourth quarter. So you're talking about your first round draft pick, your number one pick that you involved twice on back to back plays. I mean, he, you know, and we all know that he's a guy that creates space for other players on the team and whatnot. But, I mean, you target him once inside 5 minutes of the fourth quarter. And again, I'm not criticizing the offense today. They played very well. This is not a game where you're sitting there and nitpicking what the offense did, even though we can nitpick. The drop by Aguilar on third down after the Raiders had taken a 24-21 lead and forced the Chiefs to punt, that was crucial because, you know, get that, it could change the tenor of the game. So I don't want to nitpick the offense. They're not the reason they lost, but one target for Henry Ruggs just does seem like a major problem.
Yeah, I mean, maybe he wasn't open. I have to rewatch it and see. Yeah. Like the game, like maybe he was one of those games where he couldn't get off of coverage, but yeah, just in general.
Everybody else was open.
Yeah, man, maybe that's because they were focused on Ruggs. He's the decoy, the greatest decoy. I'm trying to be positive here, right?
You know, Gruden's pretty good at when he wants a guy to get a bunch of catches, he can make it happen. So I think next game we'll see Ruggs get an uptick in targets.
I mean, has Ruggs had a game yet where he's gotten an uptick in targets? I mean, you know, I think he's a guy that's eventually going to be a very big part of their offense. And you know, it might require a full offseason of Carr and Ruggs working together before they really get there. But, I mean, what's the largest targeted game? You know, he had a quote-unquote big game the last time against Kansas City, but I think that was, you know, three targets that he just happened to catch a couple of deep balls that turned into big plays.
Probably last week. Didn't he have like four or five last week, I want to say? That seems to me like
five is season high for targets for one game. Most games is three targets or fewer.
Yeah, I guess it kind of stinks, too, when you're a Raider fan, you're watching guys like Jeffrey Jefferson and CeeDee Lamb, you know, making these plays. But, you know, those guys are kind of anomalies just because rookie receivers typically don't get acclimated to the NFL that quickly. And Ruggs was the first receivers picked. But, you know, some guys develop a little later. So, you know, I wouldn't be too disappointed in Ruggs. You know, he'll have a game where he'll get some targets coming pretty soon, I think.
Three targets. I just looked it up. Three targets is his season high. He's had that a couple of times. He's never had more than three targets in a game, you know?
Yeah, Nelson Aguilar wide open all the time. You got to throw him the ball. He's streaking down the field open, so.
I think Eagles fans who are watching that game and see him catch a touchdown and have been saying, who the hell is this guy? Why is he all of a sudden? And then they saw that third down play. Let's be real. Was that an easy play for Nelson Aguilar to make? No. Was that a play that you want him to make? Absolutely. I mean, it was The ball was in his hands. Derek Carr had made, like Ted said, you know, one of the best out-of-structure plays that he's made. Phenomenal play to get the ball out there. You know, I think that's where you see why there was frustration that built with him in Philadelphia. And again, he's been great for the Raiders this year. But those kind of plays are where, you know, he does just hold you back a little bit.
Yeah, and hopefully with more development, Ruggs will start getting some of those Aguilar plays. And Ruggs has really good hands as one of his, you know, his positives coming from Alabama. But right now, you know, Aguilar's just better at just the little things as far as route running, getting off press coverage. Than Ruggs, but as Ruggs develop, he's going to be one in that Aguilar role as his career goes along.
All right, well, let's look at the positive side. The Raiders are 6-4 after 10 games, and obviously they'd rather be 7-3 right now. They'd rather be a game out of first place, but you look at the schedule, and we're not, you don't count wins in this league at all, but their next two games, both on the road, both on the East Coast, but at Atlanta, at the New York Jets. Two games that you would obviously consider very winnable, but you got to go win them. If the Raiders can win those games and get to 8-4, then suddenly their playoff chances look a heck of a lot better. And you know, you look at the results of Sunday's games. I think they're happy that a team like the Miami Dolphins goes to Denver and loses. They're less happy that a team like the Indianapolis Colts comes back and beats the Green Bay Packers in overtime. But again, they do have the Colts on their future schedule. Obviously, they do have the Dolphins on their schedule. But the next step is looking ahead to the Atlanta Falcons in that road trip. And that's a team that you're going to have to go out on the road and beat if you want to be a playoff team.
Yeah, it's a scary matchup to me. I really think they're going to be, obviously, this game was the huge focus this week. It'll be a much emotional downer, I think, having been so close. I think the Falcons, you can't get up for the Falcons at this point. But they're a dangerous team. I think they have a lot of talent still. Playing on the road, you know, it's going to be tough. So, to me, that's probably now becomes the biggest game of the year. Because if they win that one, then they go against the Jets, which is the Jets are horrible. Talent-wise, there's no comparison. So, if they win next week, they should be 8-4, and they'll be sitting pretty pretty. So, I believe next week's the one they have to get.
I will say the Falcons, I don't know what it ended up, but watching that game, I think we were maybe in the fourth quarter, and they were talking about how the Falcons were at negative yards in the second half. Falcons aren't very good. You can't think that. The Raiders definitely can't think that. The Falcons aren't very good.
But their offense, I think, can be, especially against this Raiders defense.
Negative yards, yeah, man. Negative yards in the second half.
But they weren't going against the Raiders defense, though. You know, you pointed out the Colts and Dolphins, two home games, so that'll help them out. But I think those are the two biggest games of the season for them. Even maybe even more so than this Chiefs game, just when you look at the way the wild card, you know, race is starting to break down. If they win both of those games, like even if they do slip up one of these other weeks, they'll probably be in. But if they lose one or even both of those, then they'll be in some trouble.
I mean, I think if they can win the next two, and if they can hold serve at home against the Chargers and win week 17 at Denver, a Denver team that should be out of it at that point, that's 10 wins right there. That even if they lose to the Colts and Dolphins in a 17 playoff field, should be okay. But you never really know. I mean, the Browns are so weird. They're 7-3 now after their win today, and they still just don't feel like a 7-3 team to me.
Yeah, their wins aren't that impressive. Like, I forget, somebody tweeted it out, but they've beaten like a bunch of trash teams pretty much. So.
And the Raiders have the tiebreaker again.
Yeah, I think the biggest threat to them is probably the Colts. When you just look at, you know, the rest of their schedule and which one of those teams is the best, it's probably the Colts. So, I mean, right now, you know, on the bright side there, they're in the wild card spot. You know, they had that seventh and final spot, so it's not like they're on the outside trying to get in, but it's going to be tight.
All right, well, we are not going to have a show later this week. We are all going to enjoy a little bit of time off for the Thanksgiving holiday. So I'm going to put you guys all on the spot. It's a week out, and we're going to have to already make our predictions for Raiders at Falcons. So we're going to start with you, Ted. You just saw the Raiders nearly take down the defending Super Bowl champion Chiefs. Do they go into Atlanta next week and handle business?
Yeah, I think Raiders handle business. They're going to win 35-21.
Deshaun?
Raiders are going to win. I don't know the score, though. It's too far out. But I got the Raiders. They'll bounce back. Angry game. We're going to get angry Derek Carr that game.
Let's see who they get off the COVID-19 list, right? Yeah, I'm going to take Raiders. I'm going to go with the same score that I picked for this game, but in the reverse, with the Raiders winning 31-21. What about you, Vic?
Yeah, I don't want to kick Raider fans when they're down, so Are you going to kick them?
You said it was dangerous.
I'm thinking about kicking them. My foot's back and about to – I could swing it, but I'm not going to. I'll say it's a close game. Raiders win 31-30, I'll say. I do think it's a really dangerous spot because I think they're going to be in for a letdown after this week. So it's a big one. It's a big one.
Funny, I saw Chiefs fans lamenting on Twitter, the Raiders are getting pressure with four rushers. How come we can't do that? Which was freaking hilarious to me that like the Chiefs fans were complaining about how much pressure the Raiders were able to get when we've watched the Raiders pass rush for all these years. They got a little bit of pressure on Mahomes. They did it okay, but
at this point, the Raiders have what they have. So you got to hope that if you're a Raider fan, you got to hope the chemistry gets better. They start making smarter decisions and they kind of work together to get the most of their abilities. But this is what you got. So you got some young players. You got some disappointing free agents. You got to mix them together and hopefully get a better result. So we'll see what happens.
All right. What are we looking forward to this week for Thanksgiving? Not our normal Thanksgiving, but what are we excited about for this week for Thanksgiving, guys?
Be alone in Vegas, so nothing.
What?
I'm going to make my own Thanksgiving. I'm going to make my own Thanksgiving.
That's what you're excited? That's supposed to tell us what you're depressed about. Yeah. Tell us what you're excited about.
I'm going to make my own Thanksgiving dinner for the first time, so that should be it.
Well, didn't you get your PlayStation? Isn't that what you're thankful for?
I haven't gotten it yet. Thanks for reminding me.
Oh, my bad. My bad.
Why you guys?
My bad. I thought you got it.
I'm Thanksgiving dinner, so that should be interesting to figure out how that goes.
How big of a bird you got?
I'm not a big turkey guy, but I'm going to do the mac and cheese, the dressing, the candy yams, all that, but I ain't doing the turkey.
You're doing a ham?
I'm thinking like maybe like a whole chicken, you know, like a baked whole chicken, like with some gravy or something. It's only one of me, so like, you know.
Okay, one year when I was a young man, I had Thanksgiving by myself in Fort Lauderdale. I had a Kenny Rogers Roasters on a picnic table on a beach by myself. It was pretty sad.
I've got a 20-pound bird defrosting in the fridge there. I'm gonna fire up the Traeger, gonna smoke it. Get all day smoke going. The only thing I'm mad about is that I ordered from Traeger, and maybe they get wind of this and expedite my order. I 2 weeks ago I ordered their turkey brine kit with their special turkey blend of pellets, and they haven't shipped it yet. So I've been communicating with them daily, and they're saying maybe it'll ship tomorrow. So Traeger, if you're out there, still waiting for my turkey brine kit and my pellets. I've had to go to some backup options, so you can get me my brine kit and my pellets. I'll be very happy. My 20-pound bird is ready to go on the Traeger and get smoked, and that'll be good if you can hook me up.
Please. That might be the strangest rant I've ever heard in a post-game football show. Like, in case you're listening, I need my pellets. Oh, my God. We've lost it. We've all gone cuckoo.
Oh, Sunday night, man. Yeah. What do you? Sunday night football.
It's a long day, too, before these games. You wait all day for these games. It just never gets here, and it gets here. And it was definitely a fun game to watch, but it takes a lot out of you.
We got to get Ted, Thanksgiving, and we got to get your impressions. Your first turn, your first trip to Vegas to check out Allegiant Stadium.
The stadium was stunning, you know, just looking at it from outside and walking in, definitely a slight upgrade over to Oakland Coliseum. But it was strange watching football with no crowd noise at all. But you could hear some of the hits from up top. And it was pretty cool, you know, like it was spaced out because of the pandemic. So I had room for all my stuff. And it was definitely a fun game.
Sour Patch
diagrams. And Thanksgiving, I'm not really doing anything. My family, my immediate family is get together, but no big family party, unfortunately. But we'll still have a good time.
All right, well, that'll wrap up this week's episode of State of the Nation, post-game edition from the Raiders and the Chiefs. We will be back next Sunday after the Raiders take on the Atlanta Falcons on the road in Atlanta. They'll try to get back on track, and we hope everybody enjoys a nice, safe, socially distant Thanksgiving, and again, we'll talk to you guys again next Sunday.
Peace out.
Vaya con Dios.
See you guys later.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.